Steve, I just, my prayer for this child is that the police may have chosen your name because it was convenient or touching or something, but I just really pray that that child would have something of the birthright that you have. Just credit to that child. I think it's so amazing. Anyway, but yeah, I'm glad to be here this morning, and I'll be glad if these, are the pictures going to work out, you think? Okay. It's not PowerPoint.
Baby's behind you. Sometimes God puts a DVD behind.
Climb this past month, or well, I guess it's almost a month and a half ago now, up Mount Kilimanjaro. And as Dave said, it was actually not really my dream. It was a dream of a friend of mine. He had been harassing us, a few of us, for several years. And we always had other reasons to do things, like, you know, money was tight or there were other things and priorities. But I finally went, and it was a really, God did speak to me. And it was kind of funny because I naturally kind of tend to recoil from that sort of thing. I'm going up Mount Kilimanjaro and having a spiritual experience seems somehow a bit corny or a bit cliche. So I found myself, I had to repent because I found myself actually going there almost deliberately not wanting to. I just wanted to, you know, show that you don't have to do that sort of thing. Anyway, but God sort of spoke to me, and I felt I had to repent of that. I said, no, Lord, if you really want to do that, then that's great, and I do want to be open to that. So my message this morning is basically two things, and I'll say it right now, and then you can nod off the rest of the time in case we don't have any pictures to show. And that is that, number one, God is speaking if we're listening. All right, so God is speaking if we're willing to listen. That was a challenge for me. And also, our brothers, and I'll say sisters, but I thought there'd be mostly men this morning, but our brothers, and I use that communally, bring us help and strength if we let them. All right, so God is speaking if we are listening, and our brothers and sisters bring us strength if we let them. And the other thing was is that God, our Creator, is much, much greater than His creation. I saw a lot of beautiful things, and it was fantastic, but it brought me back to saying, yeah, but God, the Creator, is greater than His creation. And the other thing was that His creatures, you and me, His created people, are greater than His created things. Africa is full of beautiful, beautiful things, features, mountains, animals, all sorts of vistas, and it was very beautiful. And it is beautiful, and we, you know, are fortunate to live in this area of the world, which people also come to visit for our own particular kind of treasures. But the reality was, as I experienced that hike, and as I drew on strength from others around me, I realized how people are so much more important than the things around us. And we live in a culture that really is increasingly isolating people from each other. We worship our things. We worship our technology, our videos, all the stuff that we kind of occupy ourselves with has become almost like we can live our lives on our own and go home after work and flip on a video and whatever we do in our lives. And we don't really, quote, need people. But it's so much more satisfying when you live in fellowship like we have a chance to. And I'm so grateful for each one of you here, you know, and it's just been fantastic. I learned one thing in Africa, and I don't know if Jean-Marie is going to... Because Jean-Marie speaks about 25,000 languages. But this is what I learned in Swahili, which is my message in a nutshell, which is Mungu na miamba wangu, akuna kama Mungu, which I think means God is our rock, and there's no one like our God. Is that good? Okay, awesome. Mungu na miamba wangu, akuna kama Mungu. There's no one like our God. And I go like this because I was fortunate enough to have our guide was a Christian. I found this out on the second day as we were walking together and talking, and increasingly I started sharing with him. And then he said something, and I just broke out into something, and we all of a sudden realized the reason we had the same perspective on things. And he would say this to me and other things that he said, half in Swahili and half in English. He said, let me make it work. And he'd always go like this. You know, I guess he's used to saying this for hikers, like, you know. They say that to people, if you're not doing very well, and they can see you're suffering, they'll say, are you doing well? Like, I only want one answer. You're doing good, right? Yeah. We had one day that we were almost half dead, and I later on saw they had texted back to the base camp, because they actually have satellite cell coverage. And the message just said, all hikers are doing well and enjoying the trip. I was like, that's not what happened that day. Anyway, I'll just give you a few facts on Kilimanjaro. Is it going to work now, you think? That could be an amazing thing. Anyway, Kilimanjaro is a large mountain. It's the one before that. There you go. It's the largest freestanding mountain in the world, apparently. I did not know that. And it's the largest volcano in the world. Most mountains, as we see them here, are part of ranges. In the North Shore, we have Barossa, and then it goes down a bit, and there's Seymour, and there's Coquitlam, and there's all these other peaks along the way. Kilimanjaro actually comes out of nowhere. It's flat African savanna, about 3,000, 4,000 feet, and it's a very volcanic area, so there are some smaller volcanic mountains. But the actual mountain of Kilimanjaro just stands by itself. There is no ridge that comes from it. It is just it. So this is the famous sort of classic view, which I did not see. This is taken from Kenya, from the north. And so that's the top of Kilimanjaro. And if you could draw it out, it just keeps on going and going and going. It's about 80 kilometers wide. This is just one mountain. It kind of defies description when you see it. I mean, when you first go there, you're looking for a mountain, you want to get a hold of it, and usually you can't see it because it's covered in clouds. But if you're fortunate, we sort of saw it the day we were heading out, and every time you make the same mistake, because you're looking for this mountain, you're looking for it, you can't see it, and you think you can't see it, and suddenly you see it. You look in the wrong place. It's actually made up of three peaks. This is the central one that everybody knows, which is called Kibo. And Kibo means Kibo. Anyway, but there are three peaks, and this is the central one, but there's one on the other side called Shira, and one on this side called Mawenzi, but they're actually all part of Kilimanjaro. But the saddle, like if you see, the lions? Has anybody ever hiked the lions? The little call between the two lions is called a saddle. It's a low point between two mountains. Most saddles are, Mike, what would you say, they could be between 30 meters wide to maybe 500 meters wide, it's hard to say. But the saddle that separates Kilimanjaro, the Kibo, this one, from the one next to it, is about 6 kilometers long. So everything is just mind-blowingly large. And it's a very fun mountain to climb in the sense that you actually go through a lot of different climate zones, which you'll sort of see here. It's on the equator, so it's an unusual place to see snow, but you go through tropical rainforests, through other plants, to a tundra zone, to ultimately alpine, where there's nothing growing at all. And the total height of this mountain is about just under 20,000 feet. So you can do it without air and oxygen, most people do, but you feel it. It's not something you want to start quickly. So we did it. It took 7 days to actually do the mountain. We acclimatized a bit beforehand, and then we took this trek up there. So that was my first point, is that God does take us on an adventure. And this I'm applying to our life as well. So I have an A, B, C, D, E here, for those of you who want to write it down. This hike was kind of like a microcosm of life, and I'm just putting a small thing. The A stands for me for Alpha, which means beginning. There has to be a vision. You can put the next picture up. The vision in this case I alluded to earlier was a friend of mine, Steve, that I've done a lot of hiking with. This was kind of something he'd always wanted to do. And somebody has to drive things. Who knows that in your life sometimes you have to drive a vision and nobody else is picking it up for you. But eventually the vision catches. And in our case, we had three of us eventually who went together. The second, the B, I put down begin. So this is more of a planning thing. I think put the next picture up. This is just a picture of us chatting around, having a soda, and talking about what we're going to do on this hike. You have to sort of put some effort together when you're doing a hike of this nature. You don't just go there. You have to read. So we read books. I had this, actually my receptionist gave me this called Kissing Kilimanjaro, Leaving It All on the Top of Africa, which is a very interesting book by a guy who hiked it and didn't do very well. But it's quite a fun read. And then there's The Rough Guide to Tanzania. So you look at books and you try to figure out as best you can from many miles away what you're going to do when you get there. And eventually you get, maps and things like that. But that's not always enough. You have to have a guide, ultimately, for these kind of things because you've never been there before. And in the spiritual realm, this is the same thing. You have to get started. You have to have a plan. And thankfully, God's Word is a plan for our lives, which I really had a chance to kind of feast on while I was on this trip. So C, I put down compass. Compass for C. You have to know how to get there. You have to get to the starting line. In our lives, sometimes the starting line is right at your front door. When you leave in the morning, go to work. But sometimes the things that God's calling you to are not at your front door. He may be calling you to something different, a new job he's going to bring you to. Or he might call you to a different place. In this case, this is the same situation we've had here where we had to travel. This mountain is not on our back door, and we had to actually get to the starting line. It wasn't a matter of being at the starting line. So there's all the usual things, the book, the travel, the vaccines, and all the things that we have to do, which is great. But that's not quite enough. You have to eventually take off. So I have a few pictures here of us going along there. Oh, yeah, so this is the day we left. It was the beginning of the big snow. Everybody remembered in January. I thankfully missed most of that. So it snowed the day before we went, but thankfully our flight was delayed, but not permanently. And there's our picture in Frankfurt. You can do the next slide. That's the overlooking, that's the southern Sudan. So that's kind of what used to be called Nubia from the air with a huge telephoto lens. And that's a gloomy slide of the Nile where it's the upper reaches of the Nile coming from Sudan towards Khartoum. And that's our plane landing in KLM. Yes. KLM is notorious. They're notorious in my mind now, but they're famous for their excellent service. So we arrived here in the start of our trip with one day to spare before we actually started our hike. And we'd already acclimatized the time zone for a couple of days in Germany visiting some relatives. And it's always a bad sign when you're an hour and a half into the flight and the head steward comes up to you and she taps you on the shoulders and you're thinking, oh, great, like I'm being upgraded maybe to business class. And she looks with a very polite face. And she knew I spoke Dutch, so we were talking together already prior to that time. And basically informed me that none of our luggage had made it on the flight. And I don't know how they knew that, but they're obviously very clever and all their computer tracking, but not clever enough to get my luggage on the flight. So we arrived already not being sure if we were even able to start this trip or whether we were going to be borrowing a lot of stuff from people we had never met. But anyway, so you never know. But life happens. You can put the next picture on there. So basically, preparation is the key. Just as in life, you can be spinning your tires abroad as much as you can be spinning your tires here in your life. So it's not just a matter of going somewhere else. You have to be prepared. I was just thinking, actually, about this. Mike Bowman was speaking about this a couple of weeks ago, about Abraham being called from Ur, which I love the way you pronounce that, from, I say Ur, anyway, to a nation which he did not even know. I mean, just taking that time of preparation of taking him to Canaan. And Joseph, we learn, was taken to Egypt with not a very nice situation, being sold as a slave by your brothers. I don't think it gets too much worse than that. And yet God was preparing a whole time so that he'd actually be in the right place at the right time to save his people from starvation. And Paul even spent time in Arabia and Jerusalem in the beginning of his ministry when he was first a believer. And Jesus himself, it's interesting that the Father does not even spare his own son the time of preparation. We know from the time of Jesus' ministry, at the beginning there was that 40 days and 40 nights that he spent in the wilderness being tested. So there's a time of preparation for everything. So for us, the time of preparation was physical. We had to get ourselves into shape somewhat. We had to kind of get ourselves into mental shape for what we were going to be doing. And I just thought it's as much the same situation as we have here in my life. You have to prepare yourself physically, but you also have to prepare yourself mentally for an occupation or a job. But most importantly is that you have to spend time with God spiritually, preparing ourselves for our lives, cutting away the stuff that he doesn't need in our lives. And that was a key time for me here. So did we go past a couple of slides, or where are we here? Oh, I'll just go up to maybe five, where I'm lost where we are here now. Oh, yeah, that's fine. So, yeah, this is Arusha. This is the town which is closest to Mount Kilimanjaro, and we stayed here for a day or two while we were waiting for our gear to arrive. This is a market you can go through next. It's a typical kind of local town with Market Square, different modes of transport. My favorite item was I took some pictures of some friends of ours and some other people they knew, and these are Maasai tribesmen. The funny thing is when you see these people walk in, they mostly live in the rural areas, but sometimes will come into town, and they still live very much a rural existence. But the one key difference from 20 years ago is when they're walking along, and they're very tall and regal looking, and they're walking along, and you're just thinking, wow, they're living back in the old ways, and suddenly there's a... and flip out of the shawl comes the cell phone. You do the next one. More of the market, carry on. We had to kill a bit of time while we waited for our stuff to arrive. I think we had the clothes we had on. So this is Arusha. You can't really see this very well because the format's not quite working, but that's a signpost in the middle of Arusha, and that's a sign to me of now we've planned, we've prepared ourselves, now we're hopefully at the start, but now we have to know which way to go. The sign is pointing to all sorts of places in Africa and all sorts of places there. And those are the three friends that I went with. So this is one way to go on foot. That's one of the most common ways around that area. It's mostly flat, so it's actually quite nice. And most days are fairly good weather. It was not rainy season right now, which is why we went at this time of year. So the weather is slightly better. Or you can bike. Another common way of getting around. I like this one. They transport everything this way, which is just really handy because it's just fun. Next. This guy was kind of giving up hope. You can't really see his tire is completely flat. This guy was actually pushing this thing along with it. Anyway, with sugar cane on top of it. Well, this is another way you can get to the start of our hike. We contemplated this very briefly and then said no. Well, everybody hires their car out there as a taxi, and it costs the equivalent of about 40 cents like to drive from here to Hope. You know, it's really cheap. If you go this route, you can't really quite see this, but there's a head there. There's another head there. You can see the guy's legs there bent over, and there's his shirt, and there's somebody else's shawl there. So these people, there's probably, I counted about 13 people in this Land Rover. You can do the next slide. Another way is this one here. These are called Dala Dalas. The answer to how many people can you fit in a Dala Dala is always one more. This is a tame one. I didn't take a picture of the ones with the people hanging out. You'll see four people hanging out the size of these going 80 kilometers an hour down the road. We elected not to go this route, primarily because we had too much stuff. Or you can take a bus. This is the main bus terminal in Arusha, festooned with inspirational figures. So starting from the right, this is my favorite. So Obama. Barack Obama. That's, I think, Jomo Kenyatta from Kenya. Michelle Obama. Says First Lady. Martin Luther King, I think that's Kofi Annan, who used to be the UN Secretary General, and Mother Teresa, and most importantly, can't see quite well, Lionel Richie. Okay. You notice Lionel Richie's in front of Mother Teresa, too. You put the next one on. But ultimately, this is the way we got. This is actually our little van here, our bus, our little van that drove us to where we were going. To the start of our hike. The start of the hike is basically up we'd call it a logging road here, but it's not a logging road there, through coffee plantations. And you're meandering up these hills, and you realize now you're on the mountain. But it goes on for miles up the side of this mountain where people are just living and planting bananas, and coffee is a big cash crop. Next one. Oh, that's my friend's idea of a sense of humor. He brought his mascot. His daughters have a set of Bible figurines, and this is Samson. But Samson, ironically, lost his hair because the hair comes off as part of the thing, and he got lost in the luggage somewhere. So he actually started the hike with no hair, which was not a good sign. We were kind of... next slide. All right, you can't see this very well in this thing, but there's Mount Kilimanjaro, so you can just see the tip of it, and this is a classic. So you're looking here at the top of the trees, and then suddenly you realize it's way up there. And that's about as good as you see it from this direction. It's usually fuzzed out. All right, so you have to have some degree of preparation for this, and now we can get to the start. So the D, in following along, so we got alpha, starting vision, beginning planning, compass is C. D is dogged determination. I just had to make it sound with D. I called it persistence. So the journey begins. Journeys are always exciting at the beginning, and hikes are no different. They're usually exciting at the beginning and the end. And there's really great moments in between of beauty and things like that. But I'll maybe show you a few of those. We want to go to the next slide. Oh, so there we are at the gate. This is the official starting gate where you drive your cars this far, or trucks, whatever you come in. And then you start on the, there's a road for the first part, which you actually walk on. Next one. Yeah, so this is a weighing station. So they are very careful about how much people take, porters, etc., as well as us, so that you're not carrying too much. So they actually weigh things before you take off on the trail, which is new to me. Next. Right, so again, you're starting this route, and you have to know where to go. And this reminds me of how our life track, we have to start with a plan. For us, you have to have some sort of degree of scale when you're starting a hike. It's different than when you're traveling across the... I think I brought a globe. Is there my globe there? Oh, here we go. So anyway, this is one way you can start to hike up Mount Kilimanjaro. You can start with a globe. So the globe's not very helpful, though, because it's basically... There's Africa, and we're somewhere around right there. It's right at the border of Kenya and Tanzania. Now, you can imagine this is not going to pack very well in a suitcase, and it's a bit short on detail. The scale of this map or this globe I looked at yesterday is 1 in 42 million. So 1 centimeter is like 420 kilometers. So not going to be very helpful. So thankfully, I had a couple of maps along. But even this one, which is Africa, is... you know, it's good for the big picture, and that's great to have, but again, you can appreciate from that, whoa, don't try this at home. So right about there where the white is, there's Lake Victoria, that blue thing. So we're right in this little white thing. But you can appreciate that's not going to help me very much if I'm hiking up a mountain. So I got a better one. I got this one, Africa Northeast, but it's still 1 in 5 million. So that wasn't going to help either. Oh, but wait a second. I got one from Tanzania. But unfortunately, it was still 1 to 2 million. So still not doing very much. Now, 1 centimeter is down to 20 kilometers now, which is getting better. So that's not going to help you very much when you're going on this hike. So the best thing I've found is to find a guide. I think the next photo shows our guide. So this is Mexen. Mexen was... as I said, a believer, fellow brother in the Lord. And it's always a good sign when somebody's wearing a shirt that says Team Kilimanjaro, and you can't see it, unfortunately, with the resolution, but the water bottle says Kilimanjaro on it as well. So that was a good sign. This guy maybe knew where he was going. In our lives, too, the Word is our guide. It speaks to us, but God has put people around us to help us as well who have been down the trail before. We'll just go through a couple more of the pictures here. So this is the first part of our trail walking up. It's, as I said, it's actually a road at this point. And you go up through essentially into this tropical rainforest. The road disappears and it just becomes a trail. You can do the next one. So this is just a look at up at the rainforest area. Sorry if I'm in people's way. Next one. Yeah, so more of the same. And there's lots of beautiful flowers along the way. Next. This is a giant lobelia. That's about 24 inches across, to give you a sense of scale. Yeah, carry on. So you ascend above now the tropical rainforest. Now you're getting into sort of shrubland, moorland, they call it. And that distant hump there in the horizon is Shira. That's the third peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. So you can appreciate that it looks like it's another mountain, but that is part of the same mountain. So it's a pretty bizarre experience. Next. Oh, that's a telephoto view of the same thing, so I can see a little closer. All right, so that was our first camp, the first night we did it. And you can see with the telephoto, you can see the summit starting to show up now a little bit closer to us. Actually, no, that wasn't. That was a later night. So E stands for every day as it comes. Taking every day as it comes. I had... opportunity to get encouragement through a bunch of words that were given to me before I left, which were very, very helpful. And this slide reminds me of that. So, as I said, everything is sort of exciting at the start and finish, but sometimes during the middle, it can be a little bit less easy. Yeah, next slide. Oh, carry on. A few more pictures here. These are icicles. So this is actually in the morning around 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock in the morning. So you can see this is, oh, it's nice and tropical, the ice crystals are still there. So it's actually very cold up here. It's getting much higher, about 13,000 feet at this point. Next one. All right. So, yeah, this is just a reminder. So sometimes the in-between, between the exciting finish and the exciting end and the exciting beginning and whatever, there's just a lot of trudging. You know, and how many of us know in our lives, sometimes things that start off with this exciting vision you've got for your neighborhood or for your family or for whatever, and what you're going to do and you're going to travel. But then once everybody's stopped saying hurrah and congratulations, then there's this walk that you do. And it's a glorious walk, but sometimes it doesn't seem all that, you know, inspirational. There's just a lot of monotonous landscape and trudging. This was kind of an inspirational thing, but actually you can just go back one. The view is very lovely, but when we went just back to that previous slide, we talked to our guy and we thought, wow, this is great. You know, we're making such good progress. We're going to be there way before, 7 days is up. That's just the previous one. And he said, no, this is the west. This is the western appearance of it. We're starting from the east. So we thought, what? So we're right there. You know, that's where the trail must go. But this little gap, there's one weak point here where you can get up, which is there. It's called the Western Breach. But they don't allow people really to climb that anymore because a number of years ago, not that many years ago, on two different occasions, climbers were killed by rock fall because of the snow is receding with climate change, etc. And it's all rotten lava rock, and it's completely unstable. So you can't actually get up there reliably anymore. So now they take you on this wonderful excursion that goes way in the distance over several ridges that are coming down, up and down and up and down. You actually end up going all the way around to this side of the mountain and going up. So at that point, that was when we sort of thought maybe this wasn't the best plan. Maybe that sort of sitting around, you know, Harrison Hot Springs might have been a better way to spend our time. But sometimes that's kind of what it is. You know, walking out the vision, especially when you can see it. When you know it, when you know what God's speaking to you in your life, and yet he doesn't bring you there directly, and you see it pass by, and you say, wait a sec, I'm supposed to be going there, just like the people of Israel. But God sometimes brings us through life because he wants to teach us things along the way. So taking every day that comes, this is a word that I read while I was on my journey. This is from Philippians 3, 12 to 14. It says, not that I have already obtained all this or have already been made perfect, but I press on to take a hold of that which Christ Jesus took hold of me. But one thing I do, forgetting what's behind and straining towards ahead, I press on to the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. So I haven't obtained all this, but I press on. I forget what's behind. I leave it behind. And I go on to the goal that God's preparing for me. You can go up one slide, or past this, the next slide. The next slide just shows the kind of more trudging along the flats on one of the ridges below Mount Kilimanjaro that we had to go across to get to that east side. We're going backwards. I guess going forward there. I don't know. Yeah, two more. 43, I guess, it would be on this one, the next one. Anyway, so this is a view when we came up one of these many, many ridges where you went down and up, and that's looking down the valley we'd sort of come from. And as I looked back, I just realized I was so grateful I didn't have to go back down and do that over again. You don't go back the same way you came. There's a route that you go down because the way up is slow, the way back is much faster because you can descend from high altitude quickly, but you have to take your time going up. It's a lot harder. So if you left something behind or some valuables or whatever, you really didn't want to do that because nobody wanted to go back down and have to go back up whatever section. You know, we forgot what was behind us, you know. And in my spiritual walk, I realize how often I don't forget things. I think about them. I sort of mull on them and wish I had done something differently. And I think the Bible isn't necessarily talking about forgetting all the times that you actually can't remember it at all. I mean, most of us, if we've had major sin in our life, sadly, will recall the time that we fell or we, you know, screwed up, or we did something wrong. But it's more of a sense of leaving it behind as being a current determinant of who you are or what God is doing with you or not doing with you. All right, that's what it is to forget what's behind and strain You do not want to go backwards in your life. You don't want to have to go through that trail that you've already gone through before and you've been there. And thankfully, the Lord doesn't call us to do that. He doesn't take us back down the same trail. I was reminded as we've been going through Galatians, talking about the law. I mean, the wonderful freedom we have, that the law is meant to be a reminder. Thank the Lord, I don't have to go on that trail again. Christ has taken it for me. I don't have to go back and do that again. He's already done it. He's not there to make us relive the past. He's us there to take us onto the future. So when you forget what is behind, you can be encouraged. You can look back and see what God has brought you through. I was encouraged to look back and see what we had done, but I was discouraged by the thought that I might have to go back and do it again. But I was encouraged because I knew I didn't, because we had a guide, and he was taking us on the right trail. And it wasn't raining, so we could actually see where we were going, that he was taking us the right way. Next slide. Oh, that's right, Philippians 3, verse 12 to 14. So I forget what is behind, and I'm looking instead forward to what's ahead. Next slide. And the distance with a telephoto lens, we can start to see the summit coming into view. And that's what it was about. His mercies were new every morning. His strength is new every morning. So don't let Satan deceive you into hiking the same hike twice. Of that kind of a hike. You don't have to go up the hill. All right. So I was reminded about one of my favorite movies is Chariots of Fire. And there's one scene where Eric Liddell is preaching to a congregation. He's bringing in his life as a runner. And I'm not going to even attempt the Scottish accent, but I'm inspired to. But he says, where does the strength come from? He asks him, where's the strength when I'm running come from? And he basically goes on to tell them how he feels the Lord's strength with him and how we derive our strength from the Lord, just like a runner does, gets his strength. And my strength on this trip came from many sources, but one thing that reminded me of encouragement, because you need encouragement on a trip like this. The physical strength I discovered is not enough. If you're mentally discouraged, you'll succumb to altitude sickness fast. Studies have shown that. If you're spiritually discouraged, if you're not getting along well, if there's other stuff going on, your physical resilience goes down. It doesn't matter what shape you're in. Anyway, God's Word and His Spirit is a light to our feet. Psalm 119, verse 105, many people are familiar with that. Your Word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. And definitely I got a lot of encouragement from this scripture. So physically, you have to be sustained on a hike like this. It's most obvious on a hike or any other physical endeavor is you have to have physical sustenance. Now, this may seem obvious when you're climbing a mountain that you have to eat and drink. Like the next picture, I think I have a picture of us going forward there. There we go. So this is us stopping from grabbing some lunch on one of the ridges as we are coming below the mountain. So it seems an obvious thing. You need to eat and drink. Interesting thing is it's not obvious. As you get higher and higher, you start to lose your appetite. You lose your appetite and you lose really your thirst as well. You don't feel like doing anything. You kind of wonder why you're there. So eating is like whatever. But if you don't, you just start going down and down and down. You need to actually keep reminding yourself or be reminded by others that you need to eat and that you need to drink. Or before you know it, you'll be washed up. And if you're not physically fed, you'll end up running on empty. Well, you won't be running at all. You'll be stumbling on empty. We all know the feeling of barrenness and dryness that comes when we're not feeding ourselves in the Word or we're not hearing from God. I know I certainly do. And this is not a good feeling to have. But the good news is that God is there to speak to us if we listen to Him. And He's there to encourage us through His Word and through people around us. But you have to remember to eat. I think I have another picture of us eating. Oh, that's my friends eating along the way. They provided some hot liquids, which is so wonderful. We had some thermoses so we could boil water. There is water there, which is nice seasonally because there is still ice and snow at the top. So there's actually creeks coming down along a lot of these valleys, which is part of the reason they torture you by taking it this way, is because at least you've got water and you don't have to carry it as far. But no matter how good the fuel economy, every car runs out of gas unless you go to the filling station. And my body was no different on this trip, and I realized my spirit needs to be no different as well. All right, you know, next one here. Oh yeah, there's a little encouragement along the way. It tells you how far you are along some of the lower camps. They tell you how far you are going to be going to the next sort of tent site. I call it a camp. It's not. It's just a place to put your tents. So it's not a campsite. Next one. All right. Okay, this is just to remind me of the trail. There's two parts of my hike. There's a light part of the hike and a dark part of the hike. Many of the hikes you will do in the daytime, which is nice. The last day you do in the darkness because you have to start very early to actually get there in time. And the weather is better in the morning or in the darkness. There's less storms coming. They start to build up. The clouds come in around 10 o'clock in the morning. And if it's going to rain, that's what's going to start to happen. But in the daytime, thankfully, you can usually see when the weather's good. And this photo is here to remind me of how sometimes it can be tempting to go on your own strength when you can see the trail. There's times in life when everything seems to be going well and you think, I can do this. I'm just going to go on ahead because I can see it. Thanks for your help. I got it. I'm on. And this was one of those moments. We come to this place about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we had a lot of stamina left. We had just come down a long, long ridge. So, you know, downhill is a little easier than going uphill. So we were falsely buoyed by our strength. So we looked at this. This is called the Barranco Wall. You can sort of just see the trail going along there with the Eye of Faith. And that goes up there. It's quite a steep hike. But the guides would not let us do it. They said, no, we're stopping here for the day. I said, it's 2 o'clock, you know. I never stop hiking at 2 o'clock. Everything seems clear. I was very tempted to surge on because we had lots of energy and we were ready to tackle this. But this is the very time in our hike that we had to take stock of what we were saying. First of all, we had to listen to our guide because he's a guide. But when we thought about it, we realized it probably would be better to take that on when we were refreshed at the beginning of another day, 6:30 in the morning when we're ready to go. And it reminded me of another movie, which I think you put the next slide. Some of you may have seen this movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's that scene at the beginning where Indiana Jones and his helper are going into this cave to find this treasure, and they get through all these myriad of strange things and dangerous spots, and they finally get to the cavern, and there is this, you know, this golden figurine in the middle of this open, empty room. And his friend says, come on, we have nothing to fear here. And as he rushes ahead, Indy pulls him back and says, that's what scares me. So sometimes when you think you have nothing to fear and you rush on ahead is when the time you need to take counsel from the wise person next to you. He says, just wait one moment. Spiritually, we have to be held by his word. It's like a cold drink on a hot day. But if we don't hear from God, if we don't listen to what he's saying, the encouragement as well as the caution, we're going to get ourselves into trouble, like going up that mountain on an empty tank. So they call that section the breakfast wall. I found it later because they had never let people hike it until they had had breakfast. So nobody ever is allowed to go up at night because they've had too many people falter on the way up and just not be able to make it. I just want to read two passages that also encouraged me on this section of the hike. One is Psalm 40, verse 2. I always call this the mountain psalm. It reminds me when I'm hiking up, especially in bad weather. Lower down, the tropical stuff, you can't really see it there, but there was, you know, mud and some rain there. When you get out of the clouds, you get above that, which is nice. But Psalm 40, verse 2 says, he lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire, and he set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. There's lots of rock there. I have a few rocks here. And The guides encourage you to take rocks, despite the fact that people always say don't take rocks. But this mountain is so massive. If everybody took rocks, it would take about 10 trillion years to take the mountain down, probably by 20 feet. This is obsidian. If you want to look at it later, it's a very shiny kind of rock. Fred could tell you more about exactly how, so I won't insult anybody by trying to tell you how it's formed. This is a one you can see, this little flecks in it. What are those called again?
Porphyry.
Okay, there's little flecks of... Anyway, I'll let you explain that for those who are interested. But that was from lower down the mountain. And this rock here is one to remind me, because this actually was from the very top. This little chunk of rock that is totally gemished and I can't figure out what that is, but it's something you'd expect in a place where the climate's very harsh, I guess, because it's not pretty. But that psalm speaks to me. He set our feet on a rock. And I felt very much when I was strong that having my feet on solid rock was very necessary for this hike. And then Jen Bambury gave me a scripture before I left. If you want to turn to it, Philippians 4, verse 11 to 13. Maybe just actually a couple more slides here. Oh, yeah, so this is us hiking up that breakfast wall. So this is an example of where you kind of have to get help. But we kind of help each other push the stuff up, and you pass it to the next person in some of the steep sections, and that was the wisdom of our guides as to why you do this when you're fresh, because you actually have to do that kind of thing, which seems really easy down here. But once you get to be 14,000, 15,000 feet, it feels different for some reason. Next slide. Yeah, and things aren't always easy on hikes. You go up, and then suddenly the fog rolls, and you're not quite sure if you're going the right direction. Next one. So this is about, as I said, about 10 o'clock in the morning. This is above that ridge now, where we're coming a little bit higher. So what starts off as being very pretty, when the clouds roll in, it looks really, really pretty. But then suddenly they don't stop. They keep coming up, and then you're in it. And if you're not battened down, the rain will make life rather miserable for you. This is where another kind of adversity came on me and where Jen's scripture started to speak to me, which is a rather odd place, which you'll find out in a minute. But at this level here, my friend and I fell ill with dysentery, which is a nice way of saying things are coming out both ends at the same time. And I thought at first maybe it was, you know, altitude, except that he and I got sick within 2 hours of each other. And you realize later, you know, you're looking at your helpers and your porters and each other, and you're dipping hands in the water. And anyway, I don't need to paint the picture for you, but basically we got sick. And we couldn't really eat a lot, which is a problem when you don't feel like eating and you don't feel like drinking, and now you really don't. And you start paying a lot of... In the next slide, you can sort of see what... We started paying more visits to this place here. This is the last official outhouse. They actually have this built up on a ridge, and it's quite humorous. You don't want to go in there if you don't have to. So this is where this scripture really made a lot of sense to me. It says in Philippians 4, the later part of 11, verse 13, it says, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, as we were at this point, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. And Jen didn't know that, but that passage she gave me beforehand really helped me at this point. I was not sure when that scripture would come up because I thought, well, I don't really deserve to be talking about plenty and want when you're visiting a place like this where people are much poorer. But I'd never really paid much attention. And ironically, when I looked at my Bible, and I still haven't corrected this, I started highlighting my Bible at, I have learned to be content in all circumstances, etc. But actually, the verse starts with, I am not saying this because I am in need. And I have to go and underline that because for some reason I just glossed over that and said I've learned to be content and I've been in need. And I thought, I haven't really been in need like some people in the world have been in need. But interesting that Paul says this, that he's not saying that. He's not saying all this stuff because right at this point in time, he is in need because he's learned to be content. He has been at times where he hasn't had it good, but he has been times where he has had it good. So I realized I can say this, and this was one of God's ways of taking me into a time when I was in great need. Without going for details, I was not feeling very good. I thought at this point I wasn't sure if I'd actually be making it to the top. But we can do everything that gives us strength. Oh, and the next slide, there's Samson again. Oh, maybe just go back one. So Samson was trotted out any time we sort of felt like we were kind of flagging a bit. There'd be Samson propped up, and my friend had his sense of humor would put him wherever, usually in the same pose, because basically it's a fixed plastic doll and doesn't do anything but this. It can't put its arms down. Samson was always like this. All right. But yeah, so we were talking about the light. So when you can see the trail and you're tempted to go on ahead and you can do it in your own strength, but then you realize you can't, that's one time you have to watch out and listen to your guide. But the other time you really need your guide with you is in the darkness. The times when your eyes fail you. There's nothing to see. So this need is obvious to us on Summit Day. This is not going to show, so you don't have to worry about it. But this is actually a video. And that's a couple of headlights. And that's all we can see when you get up in the morning. You can get up anywhere between midnight or 3 in the morning, depending, you know, what you're planning to do that day or how strong your guide thinks you are. So some people would go to bed at 6, and then you'd wake up 6 later, hours later to get up so you could catch the best weather of the day. Unfortunately, it's pitch black, and you can only see one or two steps ahead of you, even with these pathetic little headlights. And here's my headlamp, which, of course, doesn't look very good in the daytime. But I realize when it's pitch black, it doesn't actually put out a lot more light than that. But this was my kind of only way of being able to see, and that was not going to get me up the mountain, because if you've ever used one of these in pitch blackness, you realize, unless you're wearing these gigantic miner's hats, which are too heavy to carry that elevation, you know, this doesn't go very far into the darkness. So we needed our guide, but I found some interesting things. The interesting thing I found was that we seemed to cover more ground in the darkness than we did in the daytime. And I wasn't expecting that. And I thought to myself, I remember thinking this at the time, I thought, there's a spiritual lesson here somewhere. But it didn't come to me at the time, because I was physically whacked. And that was just a brief moment of clearness before I got zoned out again because of the altitude. But when I was back on the ground, I realized what the spiritual lesson was. So why were we faster? There's a few things. Number one, there are fewer distractions. In the darkness, when all you can see is a step ahead of you and you've just got, and you're walking about this fast. These are my hiking boots, by the way. I haven't had time to clean them up yet. So you're going about that fast, which sounds ridiculous. And I heard about this and I thought, that's ridiculous. Oh, we'll walk faster because I'm in better shape than that. But when you're getting up to about 18,000 feet, your tempo just completely slows down. And I was going on empty because I actually hadn't eaten this morning. I couldn't eat this morning either. I was just too sick. But anyway, there are fewer distractions because you can't see anything. There's no scenery when it's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's pitch black. There's nothing. There's no viewpoints. There's no photos to take other than that one. And there are no other trails to think, oh, maybe there's a different route over there. And I was just reminded about how our life is like that, how many distractions we have when we see the beautiful views over here or the fun, fleeting pleasures of youth over here or distractions that occupy our lives and the other trails, the other things we could do with our lives, the other job I could have, all the things that we sort of look at and we're saying, is that what God's calling me to? That slows us down. We're not single-minded and focused. And somehow, just having one light, God's light on our path, His Word illuminating us, and my headlamp illuminating my trail has a way of zoning you into what counts right now. The second was we could concentrate. I couldn't see anything else, so I only had to concentrate on what really needed to be doing, which was that I had to put the next foot in front of the next one. And it's also less overwhelming. Sometimes when you look on those previous pictures, you could see how far you could see. Sometimes when you're looking ahead, it's kind of, wow, this is so beautiful. But then you're thinking, I have to go all the way up there? I can't do that. That can be rather overwhelming. The task that God sets before us, although it's a vision and it's inspirational, sometimes it can seem overwhelming. You don't think you'll be able to do it. When it's dark on a trail, you don't get overwhelmed because you're just taking one step and another step, and all you can see is your guide's footsteps ahead of you, and you're just going that far. That's all you can do. Nobody's expecting more of you. It reminded me of Joshua and Caleb. You know, when they went into the land of Canaan, they came back and everybody said, no, you can't do it. And there were the two who said, oh yeah, with God's help, we got it. And God's perspective is really what counts. And His perspective sometimes is to narrow our perspective down so He can focus us on what needs doing. The other thing I learned was trust. I had to trust my guide's footsteps. I mean, that light basically lit my path and his feet. But he could have walked off a cliff and I would have followed him. I couldn't see anything. But I had to trust, because this man had been up the mountain many times before, that his footsteps were going to go in the way we should go with our three friends. And that's hard to do for me in my life. I find trusting is easy when I have no choice. Like, I'd never been in this mountain before and it's pitch black. But trusting is harder when you feel you can bring something to the equation. that God's given you something to do in your life, but you've got a natural ability in that area, and you could actually, yeah, you could actually do a bunch of stuff and get this project going. That's very hard to have childlike faith, to trust in the Lord when you actually have something to offer, but you have to lay it down. As a reminder of the scripture of Luke 11, this is Luke 11. Luke 11 says, "Which of you fathers, if your son asks for a fish, will give him a snake instead? Or if he asks for an egg, will give him a scorpion?" So if you, even though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? At this point, I was feeling very sick, and so I could feel the need for asking for strength. And this is an encouragement that God was not going to give me a scorpion when I asked him for an egg. But more important was the part that came after that. How much more is he going to give the Holy Spirit to me and his guidance to me when I ask him? And your focus improves when you're walking in a dark trail. People have told me before, when you can't see and your people are blind, often have a very accelerated sense of hearing, or their sense of touch is better. And people who can read Braille, you know, have incredibly sensitive fingers. I mean, it's very hard to read Braille even if you learn how to do it properly. When you cannot see very well, your focus of other senses improves. And certainly what limited sight we had improved. All I needed to know was the details of the rock, the details of the slope, how steep it was. And it made it more telling because we had to stoop, because you had to kind of walk like this, because as you get up higher, there's no shelter anymore, and the wind is blowing about 60, 70 kilometers an hour up here. So if you stand up, a few times we actually got blown over, because when you're standing, your pack is on your back, you're off center anyway, and you get blown over, it's not a good thing. So it's actually better to be crouching so you're even closer to the ground ahead of you. So every step I took farther back just increased the darkness between me and my eyes and the floor. So the closer I could be stooping down, which is hard when you're tall, the better it was. But it helped me focus kind of more purposefully on my steps. But the last thing I just wanted to cover is that God uses people, and he speaks through people. I had a fresh revelation of this situation. They say that no man is an island. And no man is an island is definitely nowhere more true than climbing a mountain. You need help from fellow climbers. It's very difficult to do something like this by yourself. You need help both materially and mentally. Materially, your fellow climbers encourage you. They remind you why you're there when you have questions as to your sanity. They push you when you need to be pushed. And actually, maybe go to the next picture here if it shows up there. The way they're all chapters. So our fellow climbers were, of course, just the three of us friends, my friends and myself, but also the guides who came with us. Oh, we got pictures. Oh, I know what this is, yes. So this is actually backing up a bit. This is good. The next two pictures, you can go ahead. This was dawn as we were going up the summit. So you're looking down here. You can see those. It looks like the ocean. It's this beautiful view. Those are the clouds. And your perspective from here is like when you're in an airplane flying over the cloud layers. It's very bizarre. But it was so beautiful and so pretty. And for a moment, we forgot how miserable we were. And that's a picture of me. You can remember that picture later on. I'm reading a letter. This is about 2 hours after that when the sun has come out. Next picture. Oh, yeah. So this is a reminder how we need our fellow climbers. So God has put this synergy in nature as well. This is some pictures I took later on after we finished our hike about how we can't do it all ourselves. This is a special bird that has been created to pick ticks and pick lice and all sorts of other odd and sundry things off of animals. So this warthog warthogs are very nasty creatures. They tend to charge at things. They're one of those animals that you usually see a lot of space around. I mean, it can't kill a lion, but it can be really annoying, so everybody stays away from these guys. But yet this bird, being, you know, 1/500th its size, is totally safe. Next picture. You can see this in the next photo, maybe a little bit better. The bird is now actually picking from his eye. See this on the birds on the snout there. He's picking ticks around the eye. Now this warthog has sharp little tusks there, and, you know, you wouldn't want to mess with this thing. And yet this bird is just pecking away. I wouldn't want to stick my hand near this thing. Next picture. And it even extends up further to the Cape buffalo or African buffalo. You can see, sorry, the photo's not that great here, but there's one up there, one sitting on this guy's snout in the next picture. I think there's a few more on the next photo. You can see a bunch of them on the back of this guy. So even God's created this in nature of we need each other. And you can keep going. I think after this is the picture of our guide. That's Mexen. So who could not be encouraged with a guy like this here? Mexen was a great encouragement to us to get us on our way. And we needed him to show the way. Next slide. Oh, there he is again. There's us hiking up. This is the other thing we needed. When you're up at altitude like that, if you decide to do it on your own, you're going to have a very long trip because you have to ferry water and food to the next camp, to the next camp, to the next camp. It would take a long time if you could do it at all. So you get porters to help you with this. They do the same thing in the Andes and the Himalayas. And these guys were the real heroes of this hike because they helped carry stuff up. Their pack was heavier than my pack, and they would trudge up the same place we did. Not to the very end. They don't go to the summit. You have to do that on your own. But to the last camps, though, they're heroes. Next. So there's a couple of them going up one of the pitches with us. Yeah. And again, that's I think that's taken one of the same place we were before. So your friends that you're with, your family, I don't mean just your family, but us as a family around us, keep each other encouraged. Next. This was one of our assistant guides. He was training to be a guide, so he helped Mexen, our main guide. And Samuel was always saying, pole, pole, which means slow. That's what you hear all the time, pole, pole. Anytime they saw you thinking you were actually picking up the pace, they would step in front of you and make sure they went first because they didn't want you gassing out an hour down the trail. So pole, pole all day long. Another famous one he said, which I... Haraka, haraka, haina, baraka. Yeah, yeah. So it's a Swahili term which means hurry, hurry, has no blessing or something like that. So if you get there first, there's no extra blessing. Just take your time, enjoy life. I mean, it sounds like a great African wisdom. But it truly is, and it was very essential there. Next one. Oh, there's Mexen again. Mexen was, this is just a reminder to me, that's actually some fungus, which many of you probably recognize. We have it here too, called old man's beard. And he put this spontaneously on himself because Mexen loved plants. And he was very thrilled because I took botany in university. So he was very thrilled to hike with somebody who was actually interested to learn about these plants. So he would tell me their Swahili names. And he'd tell me all the Latin names and what they used them for. Every single plant was just amazing. I learned so much. But who could not be encouraged by a brother in the Lord like that? So you have to have the words to help you, but it helps sometimes. I can miss the whole counsel of God if I decide I'm just going to read the Bible on my own and figure it out. Because God has actually placed us in a family, in a body. He placed us in a group that was able to do this hike because we were together and strengthening each other. Hebrews 10 says, let us not forget to meet together, and let us encourage each other all the more as we see the day approaching. Next slide. So this was as we were now getting to the crater rim. There's a sign here because you can't quite see the peak is behind the green sign. It's actually a little higher. You can't actually see it from here, but it goes up that ridge. This is only about six or maybe less, 600 vertical feet short of the summit. And yet a lot of people stop here because they get a view into the crater. It's the first time you can see into the crater. And they're so bagged and trashed they can't go any further. And even though the guide says, come on, it's just, you know, it's just up past that. It's not much farther, maybe 45 minutes an hour. They can't go any further. They're bagged. They've seen the promised land, and they have to go back down. And so this reminds me of somehow we get to that point where we're just about to see it, and we think, and we can't go any further. At that point, your physical strength will not help you get up the last 500-600 feet. My physical strength was not going to be enough to get me up there. It was the mental strength that I got from the letter, which that picture you saw earlier of me reading a letter, that got me up there. And in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11, it says, after talking about Jesus died for us, he says, therefore, because he has paid the penalty, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as, in fact, you are doing. The word edifice that we have, a building, is the same as when we talk about edifying each other. It's to build each other up. It's to build a building of encouragement. That's going to be enough to get us, each one of us, on the walk that we have. Each one of you needs encouragement from each one of us to help in what God's speaking to you. And one of the ways these guys encouraged us at this point, which you can't quite see, but we're holding a can, which they thought this was a funny joke, I guess, that we needed it. I had my first ever Red Bull right here. So we're all holding a can of Red Bull because they figured, you know, we'd bring this along just in case. But they realized at this point that we were going to be okay. They thought we could do it, but they said, we have it anyway, and it's going to explode or whatever because of the pressure.
Yeah.
So anyway, we opened these cans of Red Bull, which our guide had kindly brought right from the bottom. And I don't know if it kicked in fast enough by the time we were actually hiking or not, but that was their way of encouraging us with a Red Bull. So that may be my first and last ever Red Bull. But yeah, so I alluded earlier to that letter. I had been quite sick. I couldn't eat. My blood sugar was low. It was dark just before this when we were coming up there. What you saw, it was cold. The wind is blowing. You know, you're fatigued. The air is thin. And I was actually felt like my brain was there, and I was walking here now, and I wasn't actually going. I had to stop because I couldn't. I actually had to stop. So I forced myself to eat a granola bar and kind of, you know, the guys waited for me, and I just was able to kind of get enough sugar in my system that I was able to go a little further. And the light started to come above the horizon, and we all sat down for a rest again. And my friend Darcy gave me this letter, which I showed, which actually I have here. And this was another reason you can be encouraged. So Lauren had given this letter, my daughter Lauren had given this letter to him and said, give this to my dad when he needs it. And so he gave this letter to me. I'm just not going to read the whole thing. But I'll just read a couple of quick things. Blah, blah, blah. Of course, I have been missing you for a while. I've also been praying for you, and especially today, me and my dorm are praying for you. And so a few other things. Yes, I'm so excited you're doing the hike. I Google mapped it once in case I have to come up there to rescue you, but it involves a lot of walking, ostrich riding, and kayaking.
Yeah.
If you know Lauren, you know her bizarre sense of humor. So let's keep injuries to a minimum, all right? All right. Also, I might have to get security, which you guys know what that means. Anyways, you got this, Dad. Just think like the little train engine did in my favorite childhood book that you read me. I know I can. I know I can. I can't wait for you to come back so I can hear your stories. Hope you have so much fun, grow a lot, and experience God in crazy, awesome ways. I believe in you. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will hike Kilimanjaro and not grow weary or faint. So much love and prayers. So at about 5,400 meters, I read that. And that was an encouragement to my spirit, you can imagine, at a time when I needed it. And my friend did a wonderful job of sensing when I needed that. And I never looked back. Galatians says, carry each other's burdens, and this way you fulfill the law of Christ. So we're almost at the end. We're getting to the top. In hiking, there's always a top. There usually is. In the next picture, this is just us on a side summit just before you get to the main ridge to Kilimanjaro. We did a little side trek just to climb up this lava tube called the Lava Tower. And there is a top, so you can take a picture. It's always very rewarding. But in life, it's not always that obvious. Sometimes there isn't an obvious top. God takes us through a process. Hebrews says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but later produces a harvest of righteousness for those who have been trained by it. I was fortunate to see the end of this hike, but we are not always fortunate enough to see the end of the result of our labors. We learned last couple of weeks about a few of those things in Hebrews 11 of the heroes of the faith who did all these things but never actually saw it, the promised land. Sometimes you are going to do things, and I am going to do things that somebody else is going to benefit from, or maybe your children, or maybe somebody very far away from you is going to benefit from it. But that's just the way it goes in life, and God is going to speak to other people through that. The Lord willing, He will also show you lots of things along the way, and hopefully we will also see a vista of the top. The other thing is we have to not harden our heart to hear God if He's going to help us to do that. My heart was hardened often because I just figured I had enough strength on my own to get up this mountain until I realized I couldn't, and I had to rely on the people around me. But hardening doesn't need effort. You don't have to harden your heart. It does a good job of that on its own. yesterday I was opening a can of paint for Annika. She was painting some stuff, and I had this brown paint left over, and I was so thrilled, but I realized it had been a lot more years than I thought since we last used it. And how many of you have opened that last can of paint, and you're going to do that project you've put off for so long, and you get that thick, who knows how much, maybe it's the whole thing. So I was chiseling through this thing, but, you know, that paint can didn't need help hardening. It was going to do it. If you leave it enough time and don't put the time and effort to shaking it up, paint hardens. You don't have to make an effort to harden your heart. It'll do that on its own. You have to make an effort to soften your heart. I have to make an effort to soften my heart. Ephesians 4 spoke to me in this passage. You must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They're darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardening of their hearts. My lack of investment into my spiritual life causes my heart to be hardened. It causes God to speak and me not to hear him. And if I'm not actively softening it, my heart is going to harden like the paint can. And I'll be in a way of futile thinking or futile acting or whatever, but I'll be spinning my tires doing something that seems to look good, but it's not actually going where God wants me to go. The Bible says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. It also says, he who hardens his heart falls into trouble. Proverbs 28. He who hardens his heart falls into trouble. If you harden your heart to what your guide is saying on this mountain and you decide you can do it on your own better, you will fall, quite literally, into trouble. We bumped into a lot of people on this trek who had actually, I don't have any pictures of them because it would be rather inconsiderate to take photos, but, excuse me, who had stumbled and fallen. And a few times I had to stop because I thought I'd need to help somebody, but people said, no, oh, it's okay, we're waiting. And it was very, very, I'm not sure what the word is, but daunting, I guess, because many of them were people I'd seen lower down the trail a couple of days before, were very fit. There was a triathlete who had to be carried off the mountain on a special mountain stretcher. There was another guy who'd been training for ages and was way slimmer than me and was a runner. And he was one of the people we passed. He was actually passed out on the trail with his girlfriend, and he never made it to the top. So they were constantly bringing people down. And I thought, oh, this is not, why am I here? But many of the guides said the reasons that some of these people don't make it is because they think they're so well trained. You don't have much faith in yourself, so you rely on me. I'll get you to the top. These people, they think they can do it, and they try to go too fast. They try to shorten it by a day or two, and yet they never made it. And if you just look at the next slide, I think it takes us on our final ridge to the summit. So that's me with our guide there. So we're trudging up this last bit till you go to the final rock, up to the actual summit there. So this is at the crater rim approaching it. You're taking it really slow, and I followed him, and at this point I was really, really listening because I didn't want to get altitude sickness. So we went on below. This is looking down into the crater, and you could hike down. We went down to the glaciers into the distance where the ash pit is. So next slide, you can see I followed very close behind him. If you're going down ice, you have to follow the steps of the person who's in front of you, because if you don't do that, you either have to be really strong, which I wasn't at this point, or it's safest to walk in the holes that he's managed to chip out for you. So I stayed very close to him. Next picture. But if you do that, there's a reward. And once we got into the crater itself, this is what was there waiting for us. So there's that altitude sickness. I was afraid. I didn't want to get altitude sickness. So it was a good fear because I stayed in touch with my guide. But there's a much worse problem that happens when we harden our hearts, and that is attitude sickness. And if you have attitude sickness, that means you're not going to listen to what our guide says to us. And that's far more important than whether I made it up this small mountain or not. You can see a picture, if you go to the next picture there. This is actually a picture of this stretcher where they left it after they carried somebody down. Thankfully, I didn't actually need this. This is a mock-up photo, yeah. But so this thing has springs on it. It's a bicycle tire, and one person will go on each corner, and they'll basically lift this, and when they can, then they'll actually roll it, so it saves a bit on energy. So this was, unfortunately, a frequently used item because you can't land helicopters up at this altitude. It's too high. So they have to get them down lower so that they can either bring them all the way out if they're well enough, or if they're really not well enough, then at least low enough that a helicopter can land. So altitude sickness is much to be feared, but attitude sickness even worse. And the biggest trouble I have is my busyness. I think we can all relate to that. Busyness is time. I don't have enough time. That's an easy excuse. But we need to get, I realized on this trip, I wasn't going to come back and have the luxury of time. This is a holiday, but when I come back, what's going to be changed? Nothing's going to be changed. The only thing I think that changed is I realized that I do have control over my head space and my heart space. How many of us, Dave was asking earlier, what were you daydreaming about while we were worshiping? Our brains are very complex. Our hearts are very complex. We're capable of doing way more than these computers can. We can have several operating systems going at the same time, which is not a bad thing. So we have a lot of thought space. We've got a lot of head space, a lot of heart space. What are you thinking about? What are you dreaming about? What are you wishing for in your day-to-day space when you're busy? In the midst of that busyness, while you're all doing this parallel, what's your parallel operating system up here and here doing? And that's what God challenged me at, to acknowledge that he might be speaking, to hear him that he's speaking, and to take time to ponder those things rather than more jobs and more duties and looking at computer, more emails, or looking at YouTube videos because it looks like a really fascinating link that I just got. All these things that just take up time, they're not necessarily bad, but they're going to take up my head space and my heart space. I have to open the shades in my life a bit more. I was reminded this last week, the sun came out after a rain, and I have, in my office, I have these privacy blinds so that people can't see in, but I have this nice window in the exam room, and it's very nice because it lets the light in, but I can't actually see anything. So I was just, lumbering along and thinking, I was going to have to bike home again, the pouring rain, and somebody came in and said, oh, it's so beautiful outside, and I said, what are you talking about? It's like pouring rain. I said, no, look outside. I rolled up the blinds, and sure enough, the sun had come out. It was absolutely gorgeous. And I thought, how often in my life do I have the blinds? I've taken stock of what I think life is like, and I shut the blinds, and I carry on with things. And I'm not looking at what God has done in the meantime, whether I'm seeing it or hearing it. I've shut the shades. So my challenge to you is get your head space and your heart space cleaned out a bit more. And we need to open the shades of our life. Anyway, so time is up. Sorry, I'm having a great time. Last few pictures, I'll just run through these. Oh, that's a cruel photo of my friend. This is at the very end, coming down the last little bit of the logging road. I was actually hiking backwards. I'm not actually hiking up. My toes were so smushed, they're still black, that I had to actually walk backwards. The last bit, I couldn't even walk downhill anymore. So he thought that would be funny to take a photo of that. Anyway, but I made fun of him because I had these boots on, because I had these things with, and I could use crampons potentially on these. I could go down the ice, whereas his comfy boots couldn't. But he had it all over me on that last bit. So these are just some beautiful vistas. God's creation is magnificent. There's beautiful plants along the way, lava bubbles that show up out of random spots. There's a weird Hottentot plant. I call this Oompa Loompa land. It just sort of these weird plants grow up in this area. It's a relative of the palm, and it keeps all this stuff. These are all dead leaves. It keeps all of them, I guess, because it insulates them. If it gets so cold at night here, they'd freeze. So the reason they can survive is because they actually keep that insulation on. Carry on, next one. Beautiful flowers, waterfalls lower down in the creeks. So God's creation is a magnificent, magnificent thing. But there are also unexpected surprises. I think there's one coming up here. Oh, yeah. So one of these guys had brought his bongos with him, one of the porters. And I had my tin whistle. I thought I'd actually use this up there, which is hilarious because I was so out of breath I couldn't even blow it. But this is only about 4,300 meters, so we had an impromptu jam session with a bunch of the guys were singing. He was playing his bongos, and I was playing the tin whistle. It was kind of fun. Next slide. Yes, the unexpected. Just when you least expect it, Samson showed up again to remind you why you were there. He was perennially on. He was on for it. And you see unexpected surprises like ice on top of a desert. Next slide. And then his creatures, I alluded to earlier, are also magnificent. You can scroll through these. Zebras, Cape buffalo, hippo, lions. Yeah, it won't let you out of the car here. You're not officially allowed out of the car for obvious reasons. Next one. That's using a really actually my regular lens with a slight telephoto on. This was like where Dave's feet are, so you don't want to mess around with these guys. But far more important, as I mentioned earlier, is our family. God has put us in a family. This is my family and my strength. Lauren, for those of you who don't know, that's the daughter who wrote that letter. And those are the rest of our children, Claire and Jonathan. And Jonathan was a great help to getting these slides up yesterday. So I'm hopeless with technology, and Jonathan gave much of his time yesterday to even getting these together. And if this has been going awry, you can imagine how it would have been if I was doing it by myself. It would have been even worse. So he puts us with other people who have strengths that we don't have. Carry on. And then he puts us in a family of families, our whole body together. This is our final farewell shot with our whole group when they dropped us off. We couldn't have gone up this mountain without these men. Without any of these men, I couldn't have gotten up this mountain. And the mountain that God has for us as a fellowship, for you and your individual lives, for each one of us, is far more important than Kilimanjaro is. And yet, he's put you with people around you that you can use and use to your benefit, or you can ignore them. We can leave it to ourselves and to our own devices to be able to succeed, or if we think we can succeed. And my last three pictures are actually of us at the top. I have this picture as a reminder, well, as a reminder that I actually got to the top, which is good, but also a reminder of Claire, who lent me her toque, and Tony, who lent me his hiking poles, which saved my bacon coming down, as well as for some other. And you can't see it, but actually underneath that I'm wearing Fred's geology down vest, which he used in many years up north, and I needed all the layers I could get up there. Next one. But this is more important still. It doesn't really matter that I got up there as an individual, but that I got up there with some friends supporting me. Go Canada. And the next slide, most important of all, is our group. We got up there together. And that actually meant more to me than getting up by myself. It wouldn't have mattered really much if I got, who cares? But to do something together was really what it was all about. And so my challenge is to us, and I say this to my shame, that I've far too long relied on my own strength, and maybe it took getting to the top of a mountain to remind me of what I needed to be doing, that I couldn't do this on my strength alone, to realize that. And I aim to do that no longer. But let's listen to each other. Let us listen to the Lord. Let's open our hearts. Let's not be hardened. Let's create that head space and heart space so that we can hear him. So you don't have to necessarily go to the other side of the world to do it. We need to do it right here. We can do it right here. And so I hope these words have been a blessing to you. And they've been a blessing to me. And sorry if I'm going a little bit over time. And sorry for the technology. But hey, it's okay, because technology is not everything. All right. Thank you very much. Bless you.